Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the People Processes Podcast. Today we're doing a special episode on H.R. 1, the Big Beautiful Bill, which passed over the weekend. Spent some time reading it through, and I've distilled out the key pieces that employers need to know about the no tax on tips and no tax on overtime provisions that have been passed and signed into law. H.R. 1 establishes an above-the-line deduction for qualified tips and qualified overtime compensation. Both deductions take effect for the 2025 tax year and are set to expire after the 2028 tax year, the 4 years, 25, 26, 27, and 28. While these provisions are going to be very popular with employees, the new deductions bring their own set of challenges for employers and the calculation. So we're going to go through some of this key stuff, highlights, and then some of the places that we're going to need some more clarification on. So July 3rd, 2025, the U.S. House of Representatives passed that H.R. 1, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, which was just a dramatic, crazy journey through Congress, and it's was signed into law on July 4th. We're going to talk first about tips, because they're actually the easier of the two, and then we'll talk about overtime. So, Section 70201 of the Act establishes a new above-the-line deduction for qualified tips. Above-the-line means it comes right out before AGI. It's a full income tax deduction. It's like you didn't make that money in terms of federal income tax. The following conditions are what's going to catch people up and is important to remember. The deduction is capped at $25,000 per year, and that amount is reduced by $100 for each $1,000 by which the taxpayer's adjusted gross income exceeds $150,000, $300,000 in the case of a joint return. Okay? So it's up to $25,000 a year. That's still great. Have no taxes or no income tax on those tips. Here are some of the more detailed parts. To be considered a qualified tip, the amount must be paid voluntarily without any consequence in the event of non-payment, not be the subject of negotiation, and be determined by the payor. Thus, for example, a mandatory service charge imposed by the employer for a banquet will not qualify for the deduction, and neither will a required gratuity at a restaurant that adds automatically to bill for larger parties. Failing to make this distinction will lead to employees to claim deductions to which they are not entitled. It would be highly problematic. So it is likely we're going to need to develop mandatory tipping versus non-mandatory tipping, or something along those lines in your systems to track them. Or, of course, don't charge people large group tips automatically, but I don't think that's going to be appropriate. More than likely, we're going to need to put in place a system where that's automatically, said that we put it on there, you pay taxes, or not on there, you don't pay taxes up to $25,000. The deduction applies to cash tips only, but that act broadly defines cash to include tips in cash or charged, as well as tips received by employees under a tip-sharing arrangement. The definition excludes tips that are non-cash, such as items like a gift basket or movie tickets. To qualify for the deduction, the tips must be received by an individual engaged in occupations that customarily and regularly receive tips on or before December 31, 2024. This is about deterring employers outside of the hospitality and service industries from recharacterizing a portion of their employees' existing incomes as tips in an attempt to take advantage of the new deduction. The Act requires the Treasury Secretary within 90 days to publish a list of all qualifying occupations. I don't know if you've ever tipped your plumber, right? But it's probably not a common practice, okay? So they're not going to allow them to introduce a bunch of new tipped people. There's also some other key exclusions on there. A tip does not qualify for deductions at all if it was received for services in the field of health, law, accounting, actuarial science, performing arts, consulting, athletics, financial services, or brokerage services. In any trade or business where the principal asset of such trade or business is the reputation or skill of one or more of its employees or owners, or that consists in investing or investment strategy, trading, or dealing in securities, partnerships, or commodities. You can't tip me for selling your business for $30 million. Just tip me $3 million. Not going to work that way, okay? Finally, employer requirement. The qualified tips have to be reported on statements furnished to the individual as required under various provisions of the IRS code, basically issued on a Form W-2, or otherwise reported by the taxpayer on Form 4137. That's the Social Security and Medicare tax on unreported tip income if they're doing their own, like if they're receiving tips and reporting it themselves. Employees and employers have long been required to report 100% of all tips to the IRS, including tips received in cash, via charge on credit, or through a tip sharing arrangement. And the act does not change that reporting requirement. It remains to be seen whether the act is going to encourage tip employees to more readily report those tips paid in cash, considering that such reported tips may still be subject to state and local taxation, and of course, Social Security and Medicare. But we're hoping that it does make that those cash tip reportings more accurate. The key is we're going to need to start differentiating likely between mandatory and non-mandatory tips. Finally, if you're an individual business owner watching this, and if you're in the case of qualified tips received by an individual engaged in their own trade or business, not as an employee, the deduction cannot exceed your gross income from such trade or business. Okay. So if you made $25,000 in tips and spent $10,000 to get them, so you only made $15,000, you can't pull out $25,000 in a tax deduction. So you got to include on your W-2 the amount of cash tips reported by the employee, as well as the employee's qualifying occupation is a new thing. For 2025, the Act authorizes the reporting party to approximate the amount designated as cash tips pursuant to a reasonable method to be specified by the Treasury Secretary. We don't know what that is yet. A lot of people haven't tracked this perfectly well up till now. They're going to allow approximation on there. And the W-2 will have to be updated to include occupation. So if you don't have occupation in your systems, your payroll systems that would go onto a W-2, you're going to need to get that updated. There's a bunch of kind of additional stuff in there about tips. It requires the secretary to establish other requirements to qualify for the deduction before those set forth in the act. So if the secretary needs to do something else to prevent fraud, they can. To put together regulations and provide guidance to prevent reclassification of income as qualified tips and to otherwise prevent abuse. Okay. This no tax on tips deduction takes effect for the 2025 tax year. It's in effect. Okay, that's what's important to know. It's July. Half the year is gone. You haven't been tracking this stuff appropriately up till now. You got a bit of a problem. Now, tips, I'm not super worried about because, well, employers are going to have a couple things to consider from a tracking perspective, but throughout the year, they've done pretty well already on tracking tips. Employers may also be considering revamping their tip pool arrangements, encouraging customers to tip even in scenarios when tipping was not customary, or otherwise expanding their reliance on tips to get more tip income to the pocket of their employees. There are strong rules regarding who may participate in a tip pool, and they're strict, and failing to comply with them can prove very costly. So look at your tip pool laws. You can't, for example, tip pool the owner of the company or senior management, presidents, a lot of stuff, and it varies by state. So don't just try to start shifting income to tips without really understanding this. Let some crazy people try that stuff out for a year or two before you do, if you can, right? Let someone else get hit with it. Until they actually put out the rules and provide regulations on this, you should tread very carefully. All right. We're halfway through. Put a little marker here. So 70202. This is the section of the Big Beautiful Bill, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, creates an above-the-line tax deduction for qualified overtime compensation. Now, this one is a bit more in the weeds and important to understand, and it's where a lot of people are going to mess up. Pay attention. Qualified overtime compensation is defined as overtime compensation paid to an individual required under Section 7 of the FLSA of 1938, Fair Labor Standards Act, that is in excess of the regular rate at which such individual is employed. So what does that mean? A couple things. We're going to go through some of the conditions, but I think it'll help you understand. The deduction is capped at $12,500 per year, $25,000 in the case of a joint return, for any filer. Okay, so if your husband can do $25,000 in overtime and you do zero, cool, you get to claim the whole $25,000, right? $12,500 per person. The amount is reduced by $100 for each $1,000 by which the taxpayer's modified adjusted gross income exceeds $150,000, $300,000 in the case of a joint return, just like before. So it's only for those who make less than $150,000 or $300,000, and it only allows you to do up to $12,500. This is the part you got to understand. The deduction applies only to overtime compensation that is required under the FLSA and only the amount that is in excess of the employee's regular rate. It does not apply to overtime premiums that are required, that are not required by the FLSA, but are paid pursuant to a contract, including collective bargaining agreements, or because they are required under state law. California law requiring daily overtime, for example, not exempt. Federal government wants its money. Only under the overtime that the federal government has laid out, under the Fair Labor Standards Act, 1938, does this apply? Okay. This is a big deal. This is an attempt to, you can't double dip on these deductions. The Act clarified that qualified tips, by the way, cannot be claimed as qualified overtime. And that's really the key part here is understanding it. So just like in the tips, we needed to figure out mandatory versus non-mandatory tips. We now need to talk about federal overtime, state overtime, federal overtime, and then the other stuff, whether that's state, collective bargaining, shift differential, whatever, because they're going to be taxed at a different rate on the first $12,500. So not only is it that the critical point is it's not the amount paid in overtime. It's not the amount for the 41st hour in a week. It's the premium. It's the excess over the regular rate. Okay. So let's say you make $20 an hour. We're going to do quick math. You work 40 hours a week. That gets you $800. Okay. You work 50 hours a week. That's 10 hours of overtime. That 10 hours is not paid at $20 an hour, but instead $30 an hour. So on that 10, you made $200 in regular earnings and $100 in overtime premium. You went from $800, not to $1,000, but to $1,100. Only that extra $100 that is going to be tax-free. The regular rate is the same. So you have to go, this is going to be a big, you know, piece on here. You're going to have to change how you track this stuff. If you're in a system right now, if you work with us, a lot of our clients are this way, we'll get this changed up for them. But most payroll systems, it's going to say overtime is $30 an hour, regular is $20 an hour, and it's going to put all $30 in overtime. It needs to put the $20 in regular and just the $10 in overtime. That's what has to start being reported on the W-2, the overtime premium related to federal overtime. Now, you're also going to need to track state overtime, collective bargaining agreement overtime, daily shift differentials, overnight shift premiums, whatever. Those have got to be tracked separately. And when they conflict, you pay the federal overtime because that's tax advantaged. Okay. It's going to be a little complicated. You're going to have to figure out some really strong pay calculation rules. Basically, that step one is pay if it's over 40 hours in a work week, that gets paid as federal overtime. And then everything else goes below that on a separate line. Okay. That's a pretty big deal. A couple of other pieces on there, both the tax on tips and the no tax on overtime is not allowed unless the taxpayer includes their social security number on their tax return, which, I always thought that was required all the way anyway, but it turns out that's special. You can file your taxes without a social security number. So this one does in fact require a social security number. So that's interesting. We'll see if that gets challenged. I don't think it applies to a tax ID number. Yeah. Okay. The no tax on tips and no tax on overtime provisions are going to be popular with employees, and we're very excited for them, especially those in the hospitality and service industry that depend a lot on tips for their income. These new deductions are going to bring their own set of challenges for employers. It's important that you not get too fancy with this for a little while. It's going to be about tracking, adjusting, getting that set up for now. Employers may be considering converting certain salaried exempt employees to hourly non-exempt status and paying them at an artificially low rate with the rest of their weekly earnings designated as overtime. That is wild, okay? It's very unlikely to succeed that an employee classified as non-exempt under the FLSA. You have to keep an accurate record of all hours worked by the employee, calculate overtime based on actual hours worked, and you can't keep a record of a fictitious number of overtime hours to generate total weekly wages equal to the formal salary. Like, I know I'm going to get these questions. It's not the time to convert people off salary to hourly so they can get tax-free overtime. Two. For those who are hourly, employers may consider reducing their hourly rate and pushing more of their earnings into overtime compensation, right? By trying to trigger overtime at 30 hours or by paying double time for hours over 40. There was a lot of talk of this. This only applies to the required overtime premium from the FLSA. It doesn't matter what you say is overtime. only what the FLSA says is overtime. So that's going to be over 40 hours in a single work week. All right. You can't just designate stuff overtime by a creative employer. Wanted to give those little heads up. I hope this was helpful to you. My name is Rami Alijil. I'm the CEO of People Processes. We're an HR company that does everything from recruiting through retirement across the entire United States for thousands of employees. And I'd love to help you out. Down below, you'll find a quick guide on what you need to know about this. You can share it with your team. You can book some time with me if you're a U.S. employer over 10 employees and you have any questions or would like a consult. And subscribe, like, give us a comment. Let me know how you're doing. I'd love to hear from you. Thanks for taking the time.